NWBAI.org on the web. Coming up next, The Collision. And right after that, Code Pink Radio. Please stay tuned.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
To The Collision. He's Etan Thomas. I'm Dave Zirin here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM WPFW, also broadcasting on WBAI 99.5 in New York City, but we are from the DMV. Etan Thomas, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir. How are you doing?
Man, it has been such a crazy week at the intersection of sports and politics. I'm just happy I have this time to chop it up with you.
Oh, it has been crazy. It's so much. It's always so much to talk about that. We say that every show. There's always a lot to talk about.
I know, but I just feel like it's on steroids over the last month. I mean, it's and nobody dissects it like we do, at the risk of sounding a little bit prideful.
No, that is true. Say that. Those are facts.
Those are facts.
Yeah, those are facts.
You know, it's not bragging if you're that good. I think right. I said that.
Right. I agree.
Now, there's so much to discuss.
Wherever you want to start, let's do it. I'll follow you.
Okay. Well, first, I want to talk about the weekend that was in football and Naomi Osaka, who emerged as such a hero this past weekend. Yeah. I want to talk about the NBA playoffs. I want to talk about the return of the Big Ten. And I want to talk about the robbing of our hometown guy, Bradley Beal, from being on an All-NBA team.
Isn't that crazy? Isn't that crazy?
Player in NBA history to average 30 points and 6 assists and not make an All-NBA team.
Isn't that crazy? I thought it was dope how his wife, I don't know if you saw that his wife gave him an all-world or all-global, something like that, painting. Something like that. I thought that was cool. He posted that. I was like, oh, that's what's up.
Oh, my God. That was so what's up. But the first thing I wanted to discuss with you, above all else, is, I mean, we don't even have to stay on it too long, but I'm just so blown away by this Maya Moore story.
Oh, fantastic story.
That I got to discuss.
You lay it out for everybody.
All right, I'll lay it out, and then I just want your thoughts. I mean, Maya Moore is regarded as one of the great basketball players for the WNBA and for college with the UConn Huskies, whoever picked up a ball. I mean, MVPs, championships, she's got it all.
Yep.
Maya Moore made history at the intersection of sports and politics, becoming the first player in my mind to ever take time off in the middle of their prime to fight around issues of social justice, particularly around the issue for her of the prison industrial complex of our system of mass incarceration. And she was focusing very specifically around the case of a man named Jonathan Irons, mm-hmm. who, when he was 17 years old, was accused of breaking into somebody's house. He said he never did it. He was sentenced at 17 to 40 years behind bars.
That's crazy.
40 years. And this is in the state of Missouri. And let me get the story right. I believe it was Maya Moore's uncle, who was a pastor, who then worked with Jonathan Irons while he was inside. And then Maya Moore got involved in his case because her family became very passionate that Jonathan Irons was innocent and deserved to be free. So Maya Moore works on the case. Jonathan Irons is found to be not guilty, and he is released at age 39. So think about that, 20 plus years in this system. And now, and so at this point already, we've got a documentary probably, you know, directed by Ava DuVernay or something like that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You have a documentary at work, and now the documentary has turned into a feature film because it's announced that Maya Moore and Jonathan Irons are getting married.
Isn't that amazing? Amazing story. Oh, amazing story.
Goodness. I mean, so what was your reaction when you heard about this?
I mean, it was shock. I was like, wow, that is amazing. And yes, the whole thing should be turned into a movie. You can't even put into words. I mean, the respect that you have to give for Maya Moore for having the dedication to see this thing through. But what it also does, now it's a beautiful story, and you know that definitely, I saw them on The View. Yeah, that's what it's called, The View. And they were talking, I thought it was fantastic. But it also shines a light on something much bigger, which is the issue with the entire justice system. Because if Maya Moore wouldn't have had the dedication, the financial ability to be able to uncover all of the different reasons why he should not have been in prison, you know, why he wasn't guilty of this crime, then he would have been serving a 50-year sentence. That right there should show you that there is something wrong with this system, because they don't take the time. I mean, I've done so much work with, there's a great group in DC called Free Minds, and they do the work with the young under 18 in the DC prisons. I started doing the work with them while I was here with the Wizards. And, you know, it's basically a prison. You know, they call it a correctional facility, but it's a prison. They're right there. You know, the grown people are over there. They're right here. You know, they're right next to them. And it's, you peel back the reasons why most of them are there, and you peel back their cases and you look at the particulars, I would say like 85% of them shouldn't even be there. They shouldn't even be there. And then what they're there for a lot of time is little possessing a teaspoon of weed or something like that. And they're still in there. And it's like they're usually never read the Miranda rights. They're usually never like the procedure. Like it's just amazing to me. So when I heard this case, I was like, wow, does everybody see what this shines a light on and how wrong that, you know, this system is? And then you turn to people, you know, on the right, and they think that the system works perfectly fine. Like it works the way it's supposed to work. Yeah. And I'm like, no, this is a prime example of why it does not work, because people like him would have been in prison for 50 years, their entire life, from the times they were 17 years old. And that's just, you can't, I mean, anybody with eyes can see that's not right.
Yes, 50 years. One of the things that Jonathan Irons said in these interviews is he made the point that he now wants to spend his time working on other people's cases, because one would have to be so profoundly naive to believe that he's the only person who's behind bars for a crime they did not commit.
Exactly.
You would have to – I mean, think about the logic that you would have to go down. You'd have to go down that in the state of Missouri, this family, the Moore family, just happened to find the one innocent person in a prison system that has over 2 million people behind bars, and they just happened to free this one person. I mean, think about the logical leap you would have to take to think that he'd be the only one. And then you have to think about all the however many thousands of people who are behind bars who don't have a guardian angel like Maya Moore, who don't have this family that takes an interest in their case. And, you know, I think of Kenny Collins, someone whose case I've worked on, who's in Jessup in Maryland, innocent man behind bars. He's been behind bars my whole political life that I've lived here, you know, 2 decades. And it's just – it's one of those things where you're just in awe of the injustice, of the towering injustice that is our criminal justice system.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, and it can't be said enough. And that's one of the things where when we're talking about even moving forward – with, you know, we're talking about Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, you know, they have to be very clear what their plans are in order to be able to, you know, fix this very real problem. It was interesting. I had a debate with Dr. Boyce Watkins, and I think it went well. Well, you know, we disagreed the entire time, but I think it went well. We disagreed without being disagreeable. You know, it wasn't like a shouting match. Like, it wasn't like it was beef. You know what I mean? We had totally different, you know, opinions. But one of the things that, you know, the points that I made on there was, you know, Joe Biden, he explains his plans on his website, but he needs to break down specifically how he is going to right the wrong of supporting the crime bill that he supported back from 1994. And that has to be specifically expressed over and over again by him and Kamala Harris. And it's not a thing where, I mean, because with what he did and also it's important to note that many people supported this, including Bernie Sanders. He supported this bill as well. You know what I mean? So if he was the one who was in the position of Biden, he would have to answer for his support for that as well. I just have to make that crystal clear. But Joe Biden, he needs to, for this case, this Maya Moore case is the prime example of what is wrong with the justice system. And there has to be a clear-cut plan that everybody has to be able to see to differentiate between him and Trump. It can't look like they're saying the same thing and supporting the same thing and doing the same thing. There has to be a clear-cut difference. My bad. I didn't mean to go on a little bit of rant and go on a different topic, but, you know, that has to be done.
No, I agree with you 1,000%. You can't run on just, I'm not the other guy.
Right.
And, you know, in this case, I mean, it's just we know that doesn't get people to the polls. I mean, I was about to say in this case – you know, that might be a good enough message to make it over the finish line, because the other guy is as disgusting as Trump is. I mean, there's never been a president right. like this in U.S. history, I would argue, unless you want to talk about someone like, you know, my wife's a history teacher. And so she's like, well, don't forget Buchanan, who basically led us into the Civil War and was a pro-slavery. You know, like, okay, fine. but if right. we're talking about in this modern era in which we live, there's just been nobody like this guy. But you've got to – but if you want people to actually go to the polls, if you want to bring the souls to the polls, you're going to have to explain what you stand for and why it would be different. And so – and he hasn't really gotten his head around that. But let me put you on the spot in a big way, and if you have Uh-oh. To think about it, I have my answer.
Okay.
Who plays Maya Moore and Jonathan Irons in the movie?
Oh, Lord. I don't know. Let me think. You give me your opinion first, because obviously you've thought of this.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I think I have a pretty radical answer, frankly. Check this out. Let's get Sanaa Lathan.
I thought Sanaa Lathan, but I also thought Nia Long.
Oh, that's interesting. Nia Long would be great. But we know that Sanaa Lathan can – by the way, Sanaa Lathan and Omar Epps were the two stars of Love and Basketball. So
right.
my idea is you reunite those
oh.
two. Oh, Sanaa, I mean, first yeah. of all, actors, and we know that Sanaa Lathan can ball credibly.
That's not bad.
So she can play Maya Moore, and Omar Epps, who's got acting chops from the days of Juice,
right.
People might know. Omar Epps can play Jonathan Irons. I mean, I don't know. I just thought that would be a cool little twist to
reunite. All right, that's not bad, Dave.
Thank you.
Not bad.
I feel good about that. Yeah. I feel very strongly about that. And you know, what's interesting too is, you know, we talk so much about Maya Moore taking time off from sports and right. how unprecedented that was and how that dropped our jaws to the floor. But it's like now we're in this era where, you know, Renee Montgomery of the WNBA, she didn't go play in the wubble, as they call the bubble in the WNBA, precisely right. because she wanted to devote time to social justice issues. We saw Kyrie Irving and Avery Bradley make an argument that NBA players shouldn't play because of what's happening. Right. I mean, see, there's some powerful people out there who I think are willing to say when things are in this much crisis, maybe the game should stop.
I mean, and I agree. My issue was the people who, and I'm going to just keep repeating this. My issue was the people who, you know, like Stephen A. Smith, like Charles Barkley, who ridiculed Dwight Howard and Avery Bradley and Kyrie for saying that, wait a minute, maybe we should be focused on, for saying just that. And then turning around and praising all the NBA players when they decided to go on strike. You know, after Jacob Blake was shot 7 times in the back and broad daylight in front of his kids. You know, I mean, it was just the I still want Stephen A. Smith to publicly give Kyrie Irving an apology. That's what I want. That's what because and it's not just that he said, you know, he disagrees with it. You know what I mean? He didn't just say, you know, this isn't a good idea. If that was what he said, then it's no problem. But he went on his Stephen A. Smith rants and said, you know, he must be an idiot. Like, he must be foolish. He looks like a fool. Like, all of that's on TV, on his platform. I was like, that's messed up. Like, why? But there were a lot of other people who did that. I got to call, like, be honest, Michael Wilbon is my guy. Like, I like Michael Wilbon. But he went hard on them, too, at PTI. And I was like, why are y'all doing that? Why are y'all going so hard at Kyrie Irving for suggesting that there is a lot more going on right now than basketball that maybe we should be focused on? You know, I just think they need to address it. They just all skipped over it like it never happened. I was like, no, y'all need to address this.
Yeah, and Kyrie has been proven right in just a few months that there are bigger things. And, you know, that's become a consensus opinion.
Right.
You know, I think it's one of those things where if Roger Goodell, of all people, the commissioner of the NFL, can say we should have listened to Colin Kaepernick, then Michael Wilbon and Stephen A. Smith can address what you're talking about.
I agree 100%.
It's so important, you know, and there were sports writers who, not a lot of them, but sports writers of principle in the early 70s who said things like, well, you know, I thought Muhammad Ali was an absolute clown and I called him Cassius Clay, but right. you know, he was right about the Vietnam War and I was wrong. And, you know, there's something powerful in doing that.
Right. I agree.
People think you're showing weakness when you do that. I would argue you show power when you do that. I mean, if Malcolm X could do it about his entire life's philosophy, then you can't be too proud to say, I had a certain set of beliefs and now I'm starting to shift on those beliefs.
I agree 100%.
Goodness gracious. Dr. King did the same thing. There's no weakness in saying that your mind has been changed by the facts on the ground, by history. Yet for some people, and I think social media exacerbates this, they actually equate it with weakness to say, wow, I was wrong about this.
Yeah. I mean, that's why we need people like us to hold them accountable.
Yeah. And people like us to model that behavior. Cause I mean, I'm willing to say,
oh, definitely,
when I was wrong. And actually, you know, we got to go to break right now. Cause it's past a quarter after the hour.
Okay.
When we come back, I want to talk to you about this past weekend and what your thoughts were about what happened in football. It was a very interesting set of competing dynamics in the NFL in terms of the messaging they were trying to do. And then during this weekend, of course, a hero did emerge by the name of Naomi Osaka. And I want to speak to you about her and her potential, which is pretty mighty. We'll be right back after this on The Collision, 89.3 FM WPFW.
Right now. I've been trying not to go off the deep end. Give me a reason. I've been trying not to
stay on point. I've been trying to save my voice, but y'all gave me no choice. The world gone mad, can't ignore this noise. Look at these people found dead in the streets. I got some partners that hate the police. Me, I'm just trying to hold on to my peace, cause I'm liable to lose it and go get the peace.
I need a reason, I need a season, pleading with Jesus, I'm just grieving. They be like, if you are what you believe in, I do not trip, I keep the cheat. What in the H you saying in the eye? Ain't no JK when I'm talking to God. Don't need a reason to open my eyes. If I'm still breathing, I'm running for mine, man. Yeah, I've been doing better than I was before. I walk with the limp, cause I've been wrestling with the Holy Ghost. Deep in the spit, but still somehow I keep on floating. Oh, thought I lost my grip, but God reminded me it's holy.
Off the deep end. Give me a reason. I've been trying not to go off the deep end.
We are back on the Collision. He's Etan Thomas. I'm Dave Zirin here to Home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, WPFW, also being broadcast on WBAI 99.5 and A, other Pacifica stations as well. We're always there for you. Magic Mike, are you there on the mic?
Hey, what's up, Dave?
Can you tell us a little bit about what you just played? Because that really hit me in my soul.
Actually, I'm going to go ahead and let the person who chose that song, Etan, go ahead and explain to him who that is and what the song is about.
So that was Lecrae. And Lecrae was talking about being frustrated with the system, seeing all the killings that happened in the news. He went through all the different murders that were happening by the police and, you know, nobody held accountable, you know, no resolve, no anything. He talked about how the city paying out was not bringing back their lives and how frustrated he was with it and how he's having an internal battle with trying to stay positive. So that's basically what the whole song was about. He's trying not to go off the deep end, which I can definitely relate to feeling so many times when you see case after case after case happen repeatedly. And he's trying to stay positive and keep pushing, but he's also trying not to go off the deep end. So shout out to Lecrae. I thought that was a dope track.
That was amazing. And, I appreciate Mike, too, who is sounding an awful lot like Barry White there. Did you catch that?
He definitely did.
Very, very, very deep voice for Mike on the microphone.
He had on the evening voice with us.
Yeah. Yes. He had on the Quiet Storm.
Yeah, you know.
Now, let me ask you, Etan, the weekend that was in the National Football League, everything that we saw politically, do you have any broad assessments about what you saw? I certainly have mine. I'd love to hear yours.
I mean, there was so much going on. I mean, there were beautiful displays of attempted solidarity. I think that's a good way to say it. Attempted solidarity between, you know, and that's so going all the way back to Thursday, going back to the home opener with the Texans and Kansas City. And it was right before 9/11, right? Right. Yep. Before 9/11, it was this opportunity to have this statement, like to have on display of unity and equality and trying to, you know, like the movie. What's the movie with Denzel Washington was the football coach?
Remember the Titans.
Remember the Titans, right. So like a Remember the Titans moment where you have black players and white players, you know, making a statement, you know, through football for society to be able to learn from all of this stuff, right? And while they are doing it, the crowd boos. They booed, Dave. Like, it was not during the national anthem. It was after the anthem had been played. They're lining up, and literally, you can hear through the screen, if you were watching, the crowd booing. And that just ruined a potentially beautiful moment right before a time like 9/11. And it just showed, but I think it was a reflection of society. I don't think it was just, you know, some outlier fans that, you know, don't mean anything. No, I think they're a reflection of where we are right now in society. And that part was disheartening to see.
Yeah. And of course, it wasn't held during the anthem, their moment of unity. It wasn't held during, you know, while fighter planes were flying overhead. I mean, so what it showed is that, you know, this never really has been about the anthem. I mean, we already knew that, but it was such a stark display that this has never been about the troops. This has never been about the anthem. This has always been about the fan in the NFL, their resistance to seeing particularly black athletes express their politics.
Agree 100%.
Now, my take on the weekend was an interesting one, and I want to get your thoughts about this. I thought it was a fascinating kind of push-pull between the NFL doing what I'm going to call branding for Black Lives, and then the players trying to get a real message to come out through all of that. Okay. So the NFL, they have all the people on the sidelines wearing T-shirts that say, "It starts with us." And statements like that, "It starts with us," or "say her name" and "say their names," and all this stuff that was official by the NFL, and yet they don't answer that question. And I was saying that if you played a drinking game where you drank a little bit of scotch every time you heard the words from the announcers, "police" or "police brutality," you would have ended Sunday stone sober, because it's like they were so, you know, they turned it all into, you know, this is about unity, this is about healing racial division. But that's not what this summer has been about. This summer is about police reform.
I get you.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, say their names, and it's like, how do we answer that question? Say whose names?
Right.
Why are we saying their names? Yeah. It starts with us. What starts with us? What is it that needs to change? Someone has a shirt that says enough. Enough with what?
Right.
You know, it's like you have to be able to finish that sentence to report on what's happening. And the NFL was so scared to touch that thin blue line, which clearly the players themselves wanted to express solidarity with. The idea of police reform and being just fed up, as Lecrae said, with police violence.
Well, I definitely agree with that assessment, you know, we also have to acknowledge that this was a baby step for us, right? But it was a huge step for the NFL. And the way the NFL wanted to do the complete opposite, you know, just a year ago, and from the time that they whiteballed Colin Kaepernick, and, you know, that it's a huge step for them. Right. But yes, you're absolutely right. It's a baby step for us. I mean, I didn't hear anything about police. I didn't hear anything about it. They were trying to tiptoe into the issue. Right. And so I think both of them are very true.
So like you would see players with Breonna Taylor's name on their helmet, or Elijah McClain, or of course, George Floyd. And they would, announcers that I was watching would even say, "People who were victims of racial injustice." And it's like, racial injustice?
No, not racial injustice. They were murdered by the police. They can't say that. I mean, it's tiptoeing, Dave. Like, I hear what you're saying, but they try to tiptoe into this issue. You know? I mean, because it's interesting. I think that the reaction that you saw from the Kansas City fans is the exact reasons why they're tiptoeing. I think that you heard Jerry Jones say that, you know, they don't want to isolate their fans. Like, that's all they keep saying. They keep talking about their fans, and they know who their fans are. They know we saw who their fans were opening night. Like, they know. So they're like, okay, we want to do something. We hear you and everything like that. Roger Goodell came out and said, I don't think Roger Goodell, you know, that's an interesting dynamic with Roger Goodell and the different NFL teams. How do you interpret that? That, because now we see a different Roger Goodell than we saw, you know, I mean, a few years ago. What do you interpret as being the reason for the difference? Do you think it's genuine? Do you think he's trying to pee? Like, what? I can't put my finger on it. So I want to hear you tell me what your assessment of it.
Well, give me the question one more time, because
So Roger Goodell has changed his tune.
Yes,
drastically.
And so you're asking,
what is your interpretation of the reason why he changed?
I got you. My bad. I think it's 1,000% that the NFL is worried about NFL players not playing, and they're worried about strikes by NFL players, the likes of which we saw in the NBA, WNBA, Major League Baseball, the National Hockey League, tennis. I mean, Major League Soccer, we saw this across the board just a matter of weeks ago. And with the NFL, all money comes from the TV deals. It's not about fans. It's not about $9 beers. It's not about foam fingers. And so if these players do not play, you're talking about billions of dollars at stake. And they know that the players, 70% of whom are Black American players, they know that there is a serious restlessness with their absence of power in this league and their desire to express solidarity with the movement. And so they're trying to figure out ways to keep, you know, they're more, I mean, it's an interesting dynamic because you mentioned how much things had changed. They're more nervous about their players than they are about Donald Trump or the reaction of the fans. And that's, to me, a very different dynamic than what we've seen in previous years.
Interesting. Okay. All right.
That's my take on it. And I agree with that. Also want to give a big shout out, though, because I was sounding all negative about the NFL and whatnot. I want to give a shout out to the players who were, and frankly, some of the coaches who were trying to be heard on this issue beneath kind of the fluff and the branding and the messages and all the rest of it. Like thinking about people like Dontari Poe of the Dallas Cowboys. I know this is a DC show. I'm sorry to praise the Dallas Cowboy, but you know, that's Jerry Jones's team and we all know Jerry's politics, and Dontari Poe took a knee. You know, that actually took some risk.
Right.
He's the only player on the Cowboys to do it. And that took some risk. And or thinking about someone like Frank Reich, the coach of the Indianapolis Colts, who stepped out from his players and took a knee.
Mm-hmm.
Or thinking about Wink Martindale of the Baltimore Ravens, their defensive coordinator, who took a knee with players. You know, the older white dude, Wink Martindale, taking that knee. I mean, that impressed me. And then the Seattle Seahawks. Going against the Atlanta Falcons and the Seahawks, what they, and I know this because I know someone who works with the Seahawks, the players planned this themselves. This didn't get nearly enough coverage. The players planned this themselves with the Falcons, that the Seahawks would kick the ball off. The Falcons would let it fall into the end zone. But while the ball was in the air, everybody would take a knee. Everybody stopped playing. And that was pretty intense.
Right. Right.
Within a game?
I thought it was really intense. And I thought it was a great display. And it showed the unity from the players for them to all orchestrate that, like you said. And I thought it was a powerful statement. I mean, I give like a whole lot, nothing but props for that. I thought it was great. And it was very well done. And it sent their message.
And last thing is, and this before we go to break and then we come back, I promise we're going to talk about Naomi Osaka. People, I want to say I have sympathy for, because there was something else that happened. The NFL produced a video from their offices about Black Lives Matter and about the importance of players speaking out, and it included an image of Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid taking a knee.
Right.
And people on Twitter, myself included, remember I said before, admitting when maybe I'm wrong about stuff, like people on Twitter, myself included, put the NFL on blast for doing that. Like saying, oh, so he's good enough to be in your video, but they're not good enough to get signed by teams. You know, this is, you know, Colin Kaepernick blasted it. Eric Reid called it diabolical to use their images like that. And I was one of the people too saying it was diabolical. But one of the things I was thinking about later was if they did a whole tribute and didn't include Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reid, we would have accused them of erasure. We would have accused them of changing history. Yeah, we would have accused them of so much foul stuff. You know, I mean, that's the NFL's fault, I guess, for putting themselves in a no-win situation.
That's what I was going to
say. That there was, you know, that the fact that they had them in there is not the worst thing in the world. And no, actually, it might have been worse if they've kept them out.
Yes, but I think to your point, that is the NFL's fault for putting themselves in that position to where they are getting going to get criticized either way because of the fact that they whiteballed Kaepernick from the league. I think that's their fault. So I don't feel sorry for the NFL for that. They deserve the criticism either way because they put themselves in that predicament.
Exactly. That's probably the bigger point, is that they put themselves in a no-win situation. But, man, I would have put them on blast if they had been like, look at all the NFL players who protested and then not included Kaepernick.
I agree.
You know what I'm saying?
I agree.
Just on eight shades of ridiculous. But let's go to a quick break right now. It's the bottom of the hour. This is The Collision, 89.3 FM, WPFW. Your home for jazz and justice. He's Etan Thomas. I'm Dave Zirin. This is The Collision, where sports and politics collide. When we come back, Naomi Osaka and what she means to this moment.
Poisonous. Poisonous paragraph. Smash a phonograph in half. It'd be the Inspector Jack on the warpath. First class, leaving mics with a cast. Causing ruckus like the aftermath from guns blast. Run fast, here comes the verbal assaulter. Rhymes running wild like a child in a walker. I scored from the inner slums abroad. And my thoughts are raging soft, slice the mic from the cord. First criticized, but now they have become mentally paralyzed with hits that I devise. Now I testify, the best is I, rebel like an S, your highness. Blessed to electrify, revoked into for ill. Truth that I reveal, across the amateurs who scream, they keep it real. A black down, hoodied up in fatigue. Part-time minor leagues, receive third degrees. Attack like a wolf pack. Once I pull back, the guard you and bust through like a fullback. Yo, you 14 karat gold slum, computer wizard. Tapping his shot, my rap pain causes blizzards. The wildlife that kills for ice, tripe like lot of digits. Gorillas injected with strength for 80 midgets. The earth spins, ruins, rap exotic blends. Let my peeps in, gasping, swallowing aspens. With a dosage, you overdosed it. Rap high explosives, my posters hypnotized with hypnosis. I sell goods. Is on the run like natural born killers. Record breaking the album thriller. Got access to tear gas bombs and rocket launchers. Blow like dope killer bees is what I sponsor. Your entrepreneur pens a year like Shakespeare. When I grab here, collect drawers and souvenirs. My crew down German beers. My career's based on guns throwing cats in wheelchairs, etc. Damn it, any lame ass competitor who try to run get broken and fast like levers. Whatever, hard heads get shattered like mirrors. Beretta shot splatter your goose, scatter your feathers. Say never poetry, chum crumbs deal with. Blew my family overseas, imagine. If rap was crack, fully packed, I'd be tour cats, tax and kingpin of the rap, jump trafficking. Villain, the slap in Manhattan for rapping. Big ghost steps off laughing.
This is The Collision. He's Etan Thomas. I'm Dave Zirin here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM WPFW. Etan, since you're the master of the tracks, I could make a guess, but can you tell us all who that was and what that was?
That was the Purple Tape. That was classic. Wu-Tang, Raekwon.
Yes.
Classic. When I first heard that tape, I wore it out so much that I couldn't play it anymore. Like, young people don't know nothing about that. Well, you play a tape so much that it don't even play right anymore. That's what I did with the Purple Tape.
I bought three copies of Enter the 36 Chambers because of that.
36 Chambers. I played the first the Wu-Tang debut. I played that until the plastic was getting caught up in the tape player and. The boom box was I had to then twirl it with a pencil. And,
yeah, all that. Young people don't know that about that. Having to twirl it with a pencil to get it straight so it'll play again.
Exactly. And we did that proudly. We weren't like, why isn't there better technology? We had no idea.
Right. Not at all.
No idea. It was just life.
Yeah, that's how you have to do it. That's it.
Well, move on from that. So, Etan Thomas, this past weekend, I said a hero did emerge. For folks who didn't see it, and I don't know how you didn't, but Naomi Osaka, who is of Haitian and Japanese descent, carries herself so proudly as a black woman. She wins the U.S. Open. She goes through 7 rounds, and with each one wears a different face mask with a different name of someone killed by police. And it was such a powerful political procession through this, very lily white, very country club sport. And she just worked her way through it one round at a time before a stirring comeback victory in the finals. What was your impression of Naomi Osaka?
Oh, well, it was amazing. First of all, the match was amazing, the way that she battled back. And if you would have seen my house, because my daughters are all Naomi Osaka, especially baby Sierra. She is like so enamored with her and the way she's using her voice and she's watching all of that. And the one thing that she saw, you saw a video of when she went over to Coco and she asked her if she wanted to come to the mic with her after their match. Did you see that? And then she wanted to share the moment with her. And baby Sierra was just like, oh, she is just amazing all around. I was like, yeah, no, she is. But the way that she has, continuously, I mean, the match was great. The match was fantastic, on the court. It was a great comeback, because the first set was you know, she lost the first set and it was looking kind of rough, but then she just kind of re-energized herself. And it's like she got the glow, you know what I mean? Like the Bruce Leroy glow or something like that. Or she got the juice or something. And it was just on from there. But what I was so much more, you know, impressed by is her, the way that she has been using her platform and the way that she has been, you know, from wearing the mask and being, you know, of the different people who were killed by police, like saying their names and in the different press conferences and keeping that. I mean, I just been all around impressed with her. I got to say, to be honest with you.
And I got to give, I mean, this is so crazy. It's just a reflection of the times we live in, but I got to give so much props to the ESPN tennis producers for one, unlike the NFL people, not shying away from what she was doing. And then they set up this incredible moment, which I believe my understanding is that Naomi Osaka didn't know it was going to happen, where the parents of some of the people who'd been killed by police talked about how much it meant to them about what she was doing. And then they got her reaction to their testimony about what it meant to not be forgotten. And she was just, you know, reduced to tears of strength at that point. And it was just a beautiful, it was beautiful to witness. I mean, because you saw the connection between the families, the movement, and the sports all linked up into one. And like Chris Evert said, and Chris Evert gets a lot of flack because she has some kind of beef with Serena and Venus. I don't know what it is, but people then assume the worst about Chris Evert. But Chris Evert said that Naomi Osaka has become now like powerful in her shot making because she's powerful with her politics, and that the confidence goes hand in hand. And I thought that was such a beautiful thing to say and articulate, precisely because so many people were saying, oh, Naomi Osaka, your head is not around the game. You're too busy thinking about politics. It's going to cost you in the end.
You know, it's interesting. They only say that when a person like doesn't win. So, you know, that some people was rushing to say, oh, Milwaukee Bucks, they lost because they weren't focused. You know what I mean? But they haven't said that about LeBron. You know, they didn't say that he was lacking no focus. But that's just the naysayers that are just waiting for a reason to, you know, I mean, silence athletes. But I want to ask you about this statement. I'm going to read this tweet. I tweeted this earlier today, and I want you to tell me your thoughts on it. This is a tweet that we need Coach McNutt with, because he would have went on the rest of the show after I read this tweet with what he thought about it. But I want to get your opinion. So this is what I said. I said, Naomi Osaka is everything many of us were hoping Tiger Woods would be. Proud of her full heritage, but fully embracing her blackness. Tell me your thoughts about that.
Before I tell you my thoughts about it, mm-hmm. I would love to know what kind of response you got.
Well, a mixed. Some people that, you know, some people who, I guess, happen to be white, you know, they're kind of on the side of Tiger Woods, like, oh, that's not fair for you to say that about him. He's, you know, but then, I mean, most black people have been like, you know, like how Coach McNutt's reaction would have been. You know, they vehemently agree. So
let me give you my thoughts.
What's that?
Let me give you my thoughts.
Okay, cool.
There has long been, and I understand it. First of all, there's a large community, particularly in this area, of black golfers, of black people who go to the public courses or private courses too, and golf. But so there's a real community here in this area. Mm-hmm. And among this community,
here's a result.
For Tiger Woods, precisely because he broke through the way he did and how much that meant.
Right.
You know, so there is that. And I've heard people project their own political aspirations on Tiger in a way that he frankly does not deserve.
I agree. Okay.
Like, I've heard folks say that, you know, in public meetings that I've done in D.C. at Busboys and Poets, that I don't understand that when Tiger Woods wears that red shirt on Sunday, as he always does for the last round, what he's trying to do is show the red shirt, his black skin, and then the greens. And it's supposed to be red, black, and green, cover the colors of Pan-African Pride.
Ooh, that's a stretch.
And I'm just like, I'm standing there, and I don't, you know, I'm a white dude. I don't want to be like, you're wrong. You know,
that's a stretch. They stretch in that one. Okay. Yeah,
but you know what I'm saying? And but I think that, of course, I do not think for a single solitary second that this is that's true. But at the same time, it says something about how much people want Tiger, frankly, to be somebody that he is not.
Right. Right.
I'm sorry, but anybody who would call Donald Trump a friend in this climate and would take a medal from him in this climate, given everything that Trump has done, I mean, you got to look at that sideways, you know, and be like, what are you doing?
Right.
And so I think that I support your tweet 1,000%. You know, because Tiger doesn't do that.
He doesn't do it.
He doesn't do it. Doesn't do anything that you just described. Like, he's kind of 0-for-3.
Yeah.
And then here's Naomi Osaka, who is like embracing these different parts of her history.
Right.
And also embracing who she is in America, where if you're in the face of a police officer in a dark alley or something, they're not going to care when you say, well, actually, I'm half Japanese.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? They're like, oh, my goodness, I did not realize that your heritage was so, you know, it's right. Like, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So there's something like so incredible about what Naomi Osaka is doing. And it does, you know, if one wants to compare her to Tiger, he does suffer by the comparison. No question about it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's an interesting conversation, and it's not, you know, it's not trying to pick on Tiger. Like, whenever sometimes people get too sissy, I'm like, no, I'm not trying to pick on Tiger. It's just that, you know, he kind of went out of his way to go a certain direction. And when you go out of your way, I think there's room for criticism. It doesn't mean we have to, you know, throw the whole baby away. You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying there's room for critiquing in this.
And I've say two last things about Tiger. One is that I've always had a little bit of sympathy for Tiger, because when before he was old enough to drive, his late father was saying Earl Woods was saying that his son was going to be like Gandhi in terms of global political significance. Mm. And that's a heck of a weight to put on somebody's shoulders who's just a really good golfer. Because right. You and I always talk about this, that to be a political athlete's a question of choice, you know?
Yeah, it is.
It's not for everybody.
It is not. That's definitely true.
So I've always felt sympathy for him. But then where I didn't feel sympathy, and this beef, I'm sorry, but it goes back like 15 years, so I apologize for this. Okay. But I was rubbed so wrong when he did that commercial with Nike, the I Am Tiger Woods, where it's kids from all these different nationalities staring at the camera and saying, I am Tiger Woods. And that rubbed me so wrong, because that I am blank, you know, that comes from Fred Hampton after Fred Hampton was killed.
Yeah.
And a film that was made by the Panthers. And then, of course, Spike Lee paid tribute to that in the movie Malcolm X, where he had all the kids say, I am Malcolm X.
Right.
And so if you're going to lean on Spike and Malcolm and Fred Hampton to sell golf equipment.
Yeah.
And people have the right to criticize you and say, well, what are you doing to actually carry on that legacy?
And also, you know, I'll just add one more thing about Tiger Woods, since we talk about Tiger Woods. You know, when he said, when he made the point to say, no, he's not black, he's Cabalation. Okay, Cabalation. I understand it. You want to recognize all of who you are. No problems with that. That's cool. But it was almost as if he didn't fully embrace his blackness. That's what I got from it. I can't speak for everybody else. That's what I got. And in watching Naomi Osaka, she fully embraces all of her, including her blackness. And that's the difference. I mean, that right there, that's the difference between her and Tiger Woods.
Wow. It really, you're right. And it really does run very deep in terms of how we talk about this. And, you know, Howard Bryant has this great line where he says, you notice that Tiger really only said that Cablination line once, because then Nike took him in the back and said, dude, you're black. We can't sell Cablination products, but we can sell you as a black trailblazer in this sport.
But it was like he was going against it, and Nike was even trying to, you know, identify as black.
Yeah.
you know.
They're like, dude, drop that.
Yeah.
We're not doing that. We are not doing that. But we're getting towards the end of the show, and I would be so remiss. We talked about one or two things. We got probably have time for one or two. I did want to talk NBA playoffs, and I did want to talk the return of the Big Ten.
Ah, whichever one you want.
Maybe we can get through both. NBA playoffs, the Denver Nuggets somehow come back from 3-1 in two consecutive series. They're facing the L.A. Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. The other finals, Heat versus Celtics. Who do you see coming out and why?
I mean, I didn't even think Denver was going to make it here. So I can't even really, you know, I still don't understand how that happened, to be honest with you. And, you know, it's not taking anything away from them. I think they played incredible. I mean, they exceeded everybody's expectations of them. It was really them against the world, because nobody besides people from Denver or in that locker room picked Denver to beat the Clippers. You know what I mean? Like, nobody. And I think even so, the people in the locker room probably have their doubts. So, you know, you got to give them their props, but then you got to look at the Clippers and be like, what happened to y'all? Yes. Like, how did that happen? Like, you tell me, what did you see?
I saw a Clippers team that was done with the bubble. That decided they didn't, and, you know, and I'm not putting it on the bubble by any stretch. But imagine if Game 7 had been played in Los Angeles in front of a raucous house.
Okay.
You don't think that would have inspired Kawhi and Paul George to actually show up? Because they did not show up for that Game 7.
Yeah, but I don't know if I could give them the pass of it being in the bubble, though. I mean, you playing, man. Like, so it's – and that's another question of, you know, and they've been getting lambasted. Don't get me, you know, confused.
But deservedly so. I mean,
yes, deservedly so.
Score in the fourth quarter of a game seven.
But imagine if LeBron would have had that type of performance and they lost.
Oh.
I mean, it would have been, you know, I mean, and the thing about it is, it's, you know, Kawhi is a likable guy. Everybody likes Kawhi. You know what I mean? I don't know. People don't like Paul George as much, it seems. But everybody pretty much likes Kawhi. But I think there is, you know, criticism that is very well deserved with how they played in that series. And I don't know. I mean, I saw Doc Rivers said the guys weren't in shape. You know, I've heard different people say the bubble, like you said. I don't know. I can't make – they just didn't play well. Like, you know, whatever the reason. They looked awful.
Yeah, it's terrible. So you like the Lakers coming out, even though I don't know why anyone would necessarily – like, I wouldn't be comfortable betting against the Nuggets at this point.
Given, I'm rolling with the Lakers.
Yeah, but I'm rolling with the Lakers, too. I'm rolling with
– all right.
you know, it makes me nervous. I can't believe I'm saying this, but it makes me nervous to bet against the Nuggets against the Lakers.
Nah, I got the Lakers with this one. Especially with Rajon Rondo – in that lineup, because they look completely different with him. He's like their next big, you know, their third big three member. Like, so they look very good. But I really wanted to see the Lakers and Clippers matchup. I was waiting to – that was the main matchup that I wanted to see all playoffs.
True. But now we get the best passing big man arguably in NBA history in Nikola Jokic going up against Anthony Davis. So I'm not mad.
I'm not mad, but it's not the same.
It's not the same.
It's not the same.
Battle of L.A., it's not the same.
Yeah, Battle of L.A., right. It's so funny because you saw Magic immediately tweet his scene. Ooh. L.A. will always be the Lakers town. You know what I mean? And then you saw Snoop, and I was like, yeah, see, I wanted to see that battle.
No doubt. And, you know, we got to go to the East, though, because that was just an amazing game. One of the best blocks in playoff history. Bam Adebayo.
Bam Adebayo.
Tatum, the air went out of my house when he made that block.
That was amazing.
Unbelievable. Who do you like, Heat Celtics?
Ooh, I mean, the same
so
thing
matched.
The same thing with the Heat. It's hard to, you know, they're like the East version of Denver. You know what I mean? They're like the Cinderella team because nobody really picked them to be able to beat, you know, I mean, It's going to be interesting. That's going to be a very good series. I think each game is going to come down to the wire, to be honest with you. So I that could be a toss-up on that end.
Yeah, word up on that. So we've actually reached the end of the show. We're going to have to talk some Big Ten next week.
There's
some time for that. But I got to say, I think we're looking at Heat Lakers. I'm putting that out there. What about you, sir?
You got Heat Lakers. I won't disagree with that. Heat Lakers, I can see that happening.
Heat Lakers, love Jimmy Buckets.
Yeah.
Any last words? Any last thoughts? Anything else you're doing, Etan?
Man, we're both doing a whole lot. Give a shout out to Michael Smith for having us on their program. That was fun, even though I was having some program. But it was fun.
That was cool, brother from another. Very cool stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for everybody out there listening, please stay safe. Wear your mask. Stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.
With the Russian, everybody ducking, only fly got hit. Get halos over Paul Majors, watch for Lucifer. I had the beam on the Draco.
I threw the barrel at your pumpkin, puffing gelati, chilling, giving game to my youngin'. I told him that this don't come in, you gotta want it. And had that money back on time to me if I front it. I pull that gun up, I came home and left back. I'm thinking about which block that I'm killing is
over. The program is to your health.
WBAI New York at 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on the web. Coming up next at 11 o'clock will be Code Pink Radio. And please stay right where you are.
To my New York City fam, strong, resilient, and proud, now more than ever, it's super important that every New Yorker counts. The COVID-19 pandemic is affecting us all, but it's affecting our black and brown communities the most. And the only way to get the programs and the funding that we deserve is to fill out the census. It only comes once every 10 years, but the data determines billions of dollars of funding for our hospitals, emergency services, and healthcare programs, which we need now more than ever. It's just 10 questions, and by law, your information cannot be shared. There are no citizenship questions on the census, and you have a right to be counted regardless of your immigration status. So it's up to us to make sure that New York gets the funding it deserves. Go to my2020census.gov and let's be counted. Sending you so much love.
WBAI, New York, New York, New York, New York. WBAI, New York, New York, New York, New York.
We're the New Orleans Jazz Vipers at WBAI, New York City.
This Thursday, September 17th at 10 p.m. on Folk Radio, we take another deep dive into Harry Smith's Anthology of American Folk Music, an iconic collection of 84 songs which were recorded in the late 20s and early 30s, largely forgotten long before they were re-released by Folkways Records in 1952 on the new LP format. And that introduced new generations to them and played a key role in launching the folk music revival of the 50s and 60s. On Folk Radio, this Thursday, 10 p.m. to midnight on WBAI and streaming at WBAI.org.
I'm Colin Brooks. You are listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, the best radio station you'll ever hear.
WBAI accepts snowmobiles. If you have a snowmobile, we want it. We also want any extra cars, trucks, SUVs, RVs, boats, and more. Any reason is a good reason to give a vehicle to WBAI. Some do it to avoid the hassles of selling. Some like to skip the costs of repairing, while others just enjoy the good feelings of giving back to their community. But no matter your reason, donating a vehicle to WBAI is a great idea. And it's easy. Here's how it works. Simply call 866-WBAI-CAR. That's 866-922-4227. Or give online at WBAI.org/donate-your-car. Our vehicle donor support team will arrange your free pickup. When the driver arrives to tow away your great gift, you'll receive a donation receipt. Vehicle donations have the potential to drive hundreds and sometimes even thousands of dollars to WBAI. Call 866-WBAI-CAR or visit WBAI.org/donate-your-car.
Don't tell me to stop. Tell the rain. Time is right. You're listening to WBAI in New York.
We're in New York City at 99.5 FM, WBAI, WBAI.org on the web. Coming up next, Code Pink Radio.